What's up, everybody? I'm JJ John Jastrzemski.
And I'm Jason Goff. And if you haven't heard, The Ringer has gone local.
I'm bringing the fire. I'm bringing the rain from the Big Apple with my show, New York, New York.
And I'm repping Chi-Town with my new show, The Full Goal, on all things Chicago.
We've got episodes 3 nights a week with all the reaction to the local teams and guests.
Plus bonus episodes around all the big games and storylines.
So whether you're uptown, downtown, in the burbs, or a transplant,
make sure you follow New York, New York, and The Full Goal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer NBA show. It's The Answer. I'm Chris Ryan. I'm joined as always by Sirit Sohi. What's up, Sirit?
Chris, how's it going?
Well, it's going great. We're quickly approaching the All-Star game, or at least the All-Star voting, which I think you've heard probably on our podcast network. A lot of people have been doing their All-Star teams, so we wanted to try and switch it up a little bit different. We're actually at this point, I think a little bit, for most of the teams, past the midway point in the season. So it's time to start thinking about the home stretch here. I'm always looking forward. You know what I mean? Like that's what makes me the politician that I am, is I can keep my eyes on the sunset coming. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the second half of the season and ask you a couple of questions. And we'll put this all under the umbrella of, would you be shocked? So would you be shocked if any of these things happen? And we'll talk about each one of them. This is just a way for us to talk about the second half of the season. How's your NBA week been, by the way?
It's been fun. I've been working on an Ayton profile. So, you know, it's in those successive moments of just like, sometimes it feels great. Sometimes I feel like a genius. And other times I have no idea what I'm doing. But it's been a fun NBA week. Speaking of him, he is not playing right now, but the Suns played.
They did play.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They played the Mavericks. And, you know, I like watching that game, I was like, man, like they really miss him at first, right?
Then Biombo rises, though.
Yeah, that first half, it's just like all Luka. He hits that buzzer beater after a steal, which follows up a layup. It's Luka magic, you know, the Mavs fans, it's loud, it's fun. And then, like, you know, the Suns just kind of do what the Suns do, where, like, they make great adjustments in the second half. Biombo comes alive. He stops giving up every possible lob that he can. And, you know, Chris Paul just had a great game. So it was fun.
What a great segue, because that brings me to my first, would you be shocked? Would you be shocked if the Phoenix Suns cruise to the NBA championship?
You know, it's a West, right? So I would be shocked at cruising, right? But I wouldn't be surprised if they made the finals again. Mm-hmm. Warriors-Suns is the single most intriguing matchup of the season to me. It's kind of like an upgraded version of Warriors-Rockets, where, like, you have Chris Paul, and then you have, like, the superstar scorer wing next to him. But instead of a bunch of kind of, honestly, like, aging role players who are looking to win titles, veterans, they have a lot of young guys who have continued to, like, they kind of keep getting better. You know, Ayton's a lot better this season. McHale's gotten a lot better. Like, they've found this sort of perfect, you know, we talked about the Hawks last week, right? And the Hawks kind of failed at this, where we are going to revisit that team. I'm curious to see how they do. But right now, they're really struggling to strike a balance between development and winning. And the Suns kind of hit the sweet spot with that. And the Warriors are similar in a way too, but I think for them, it's more their role players that, you know, kind of have the potential, I guess, to continue to kind of grow in those roles. Whereas like with the Suns, I just kind of like, I don't know, I feel like they're better this year. They're a little bit more versatile. You know, they're a little bit more well-balanced on offense. And I don't know, like, I can't tell what the temperature is on taking this team seriously.
I think that there's a little bit of, they got some lucky breaks getting to the finals, but this year have done everything that you could possibly ask them to do to prove that they belong there. Now, when I say cruise, I don't even know what I mean by cruise. It's been a while since we've seen a team like maybe the Durant Warriors, who I think just kind of like headlocked the league. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, well, you might as well get into golf because like this is nothing's going to happen as long as these guys stay healthy. And that was the case until Durant and Thompson went down against the Raptors. You know, when I watched the Suns last night, the thing that was so impressive was the single game internal switch flipping, where they just decided at a certain point that Doncic and Brunson were not going to get into their offense. Like, they were not going to be able to get into any kind of set. They weren't going to be able to have like an easy pick and roll at the top of the key to then find shooters. And Bridges and Paul just like made life hell on the Mavericks. Now, you could say that might have to do with the Mavericks could use some more size and playmaking on the perimeter. We can get into the Mavs in a second, but I was so impressed by the Suns, like, clearly just knowing exactly when the Dallas was vulnerable and taking over the game, you know. And it wasn't like a blowout by any means, but I thought, especially the turnover battle and the Suns getting 19 turnovers off of Dallas was incredibly impressive, since Dallas has just been running through the league and they were at home and the Suns had been on a road trip. I was just like, wow, this is just like an old school, like, we're better than you performance in the fourth quarter, especially.
Yeah, when you combine the sort of like the defensive versatility on that team between Chris Paul, who got Kristaps Porzingis to take like the wildest turnaround,
yeah,
banker that, like, you know, just hit the backboard and then ricocheted to the other side of the rim. That's not a matchup advantage. I feel like everybody should know at this point, especially if you're KP, right? Like, Chris Paul's going to bump you off your spot in the post. Doesn't matter how big you are. Unless you're like Jokic, you know, just don't do it. It's not going to be good. But, you know, you have that versatility. You know, Mikhail Cam, obviously. And then you have like really just, you know, dynamic, like they have a really good coaching staff, and mm-hmm. like they're able to just kind of make adjustments on the fly. And that's obviously, you know, it's a cliche, but I think it's like sort of the thing that every team kind of aspires to be able to do, right? Like, that's what you need to be able to do in the playoffs, which is kind of like why I would be really curious to see how a 7-game series against the Warriors goes, because the Warriors are kind of, you know, they're built in a similar vein, and they're also very dynamic. They can make changes on the fly as well. We've seen them do it in the past. Because I think it would be a really great chess match. And, you know, I think the other thing is that they kind of just feel angry, you know?
Yeah.
Like they've had the failure season, right? Like, they've had the season. It's not, you know, they went all the way to the NBA Finals, but I feel like they came out of it pretty angry, but also kind of like, hey, we went to the NBA Finals.
The only people who didn't think Phoenix going to the finals was like a sweet story was Phoenix. Like, they were like, it's not just like a participation trophy for us. We want to go back.
And that was through the league too. You know, like, I remember at that time, like, there were a lot of people in the league that just felt like the Suns got really, really lucky, which was strange to me, because I think on the other end of it, like, the really obvious example of a team that got lucky was the Bucks with the Nets injuries and everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I disagreed with that at the time. I just feel like they're a playoff team. Like, they are built for it.
Oh, for
like
sure.
They have incredible shot makers. They're really well balanced.
The cool thing about them going to the finals is, like, it actually winds up being what, like, say, a Utah, who I think we're going to talk about later, mm-hmm. too, hasn't gotten a chance to do, to prove that, like, they're not just a regular season team. Like Phoenix getting to the finals, whether it was some lucky breaks or whether it was because they actually, like, just took care of anybody, all competitors, they had, like, this experience of going up and playing in front of like hostile crowds in late into an NBA finals, like, and they take that with them, and they seem, this is the one of the few teams in the league that so far, even without Ayton, has seemed like kind of unperturbed by all the circumstances that are affecting other teams, the COVID absences, any debilitating injuries that knock them out for a period of time. I mean, obviously the Warriors are kind of struggling without Draymond right now. So it's just kind of been fascinating. It's like, it's almost like don't spook the pitcher when he's throwing a no hitter. Like, I don't even want to talk about injuries with the Suns because I just, for Chris Paul's sake, want his hamstrings to hold up. But right now it's just like, man, I just expect them to win every game they play.
Yeah, that fourth quarter against Luka was kind of a perfect example of that. Like, he'd been destroying them all game. And then, you know, in that the last 5 minutes or so, like, he didn't really take any shots. Like, they took him completely out of the offense. And, you know, Dallas has some issues that they need to figure out. But, you know, it feels like they have the defensive personnel that eventually they can deal with almost any problem outside of Giannis Antetokounmpo, really. Because they also, like, you know, Curry is a guy that they've done a pretty good job on, too. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the sky is kind of the limit for them.
So you would not be shocked at all. They are currently 35-9. They're 18-4 on the road, which I really like. And they have the best net rating in the league. I mean, they are putting up the numbers to prove the talk. Another factor in last night's game, you know, he's just recently kind of gotten hot after some absences with was the ankle and COVID, is Luka, you know. And I was really excited. I hadn't watched Luka in a minute, and I know that he's been on a heater recently. There is like a collective, I think, desire in the NBA community to see this guy become like the next face of the league, you know, for a variety of reasons. How shocked would you be if Luka Doncic lifts the NBA MVP trophy at the end of the year?
I really like this one. So yeah, the Mavs are 9-2 since he's been back, and he's been incredible. Like, he's like you said, he's been on a heater. There was last night before they kind of shut him down, 41 against Toronto, multiple triple doubles. I think Luka's also just like, he's kind of the type of guy where if he hasn't played in a while, I think he's going to be really excited to get out there too. Like, it feels like he's having a lot of fun. And he's always having a lot of fun, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I think there's like this push to make him one of the faces, right? Like, I think him in a mainstream audience, really, really, you know, that would be fun, you know? That would be fun. So I could see the narrative starting to be pushed. Do you see it starting to be pushed?
It's weird because, like, obviously I'm coming from a very specific bubble where the Embiid MVP talk is very strong. So if you look at my timeline, this is like a race of one person. But I think you can make really strong, like, analytics and eye test arguments for Jokic, even though the Nuggets are struggling. It's like they're still in the playoff race with literally like one player, you know, like he's carrying this team to fifth in the West. And that's no joke when you look at like some of the teams that are below Denver.
Just a casual 49 point triple double.
Yeah. I mean, like, on a nightly basis I think Jokic is probably the best player in the league right now, considering what he's got around him. But I honestly think if they keep going the way they are, like, there needs to be probably like some serious consideration of Chris Paul. Because of like almost like a sustained campaign of two seasons, an NBA Finals visit, and what they're doing this year, even though there's no, like, I don't think you can make a statistical argument for it. I think you could make like an impact argument for it.
I love that we're doing like the Chris Paul made the Suns thing again. I love it. Like, we're right back there. He's like, yeah, he actually, he's kind of, I think he's creeping up on some people's MVP ladders for sure. But I think you're right. I think there is something to be said of like that level of impact that goes beyond what you see on the court, especially with the success of the Suns. And like you said, like the way that they have been able to kind of just skirt some of the issues that have plagued other teams this year. You know, they have obviously like the Sarver investigation is going on, and they've kind of been able to, they've been able to weather that. They were able to weather, like, you know, like COVID last year, and still kind of became like a pretty connected team. I think you definitely make a point there. But I was thinking about this because, like, I don't know, I definitely want to give Chris Paul his flowers. Like, that's been kind of the season that I'm having, but it's hard. Like, that team is so well balanced, and he's not the only player that does, like, the, you know, the workman everyday, you know, things that are required to keep the ship running, right? Like, or, you know, sailing or whatever. But he's definitely a big part of that. And image-wise, like, he is kind of, you know, because of who he was in the past, kind of taken over on that and gotten most of the credit. But, you know, like, there's obviously, you know, Monty's gotten a ton of credit too, their coaching staff. Book as well. I mean, like, he's not dissimilar to CP3 and habits and discipline and wanting things to, you know, kind of stay in order. And I don't know. I think that Paul's impact on that team is, you know, immeasurable. But at the same time, they have so many great players that it's tough for me to kind of give him the MVP, especially when, like, you know, I think Book's probably the best player on that team.
So which way are you leaning then?
With MVP?
With MVP, yeah. With MVP in general, but like
right now I've got Jokic number one. I think just like the way that he plays and the amount of injuries that they've had. This kind of goes back to last year. It's the same story of why I thought he should have won last year. It's just that he has a style of play on offense that can adapt to any situation and can kind of like allow other players to plug and play a lot more easily. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like, is it like a reverse Ewing theory? Like where as long as Jokic is there, anybody else who comes, anyone else, like Will Barton, like can kind of spell Michael Porter Jr., who could kind of spell Jamal Murray, although not really, but you know, Jamal was the one, like obviously they really missed Jamal but at the end of the day, like I think it's just that ability to keep the same system in order as well that makes it so much easier for the Nuggets as well. Like we're gonna talk about the Lakers a little bit later, but one thing that I was thinking about them is just like the volatility of building around a player like Russell Westbrook. Just really, you know, it kind of hamstrings your decision making because you have to make predictions about who and what he'll be in the future. And, like, you just never really have to do that with Jokic, right? Like, he is kind of consistently always going to, you know, he's always going to space the floor. He's always going to be good for, like, you know, getting double-digit assists, finding open cutters, like, you know, creating layups and stuff. Like, that in and of itself, to me, especially with, like, the amount of turnover of the last 2 years, just makes him even more valuable than usual, I guess.
Can I just ask you a slightly trolly question though?
Absolutely.
Let's say like the Nuggets get the six seed or maybe the seven and they lose in the first round. What differentiates Jokic's season from the Westbrook MVP season that everybody seems to regret?
You know what? I would say expectations probably.
Sure. Okay.
And maybe expectations have kind of change, like expectations changed for the Nuggets multiple times because of injury, so I think it'd be hard to look at kind of, you know, their preseason expectations. But at the same time, I think like when with all of the injuries that they've had, like I don't think anybody really expected them to even stay afloat a lot of the times, and they have. Whereas that Westbrook season, they either, I don't remember this now, but they either ended up winning or ended up tied with what Vegas had them as.
They were, oh, really? Okay.
They were, yeah, like we kind of created this false narrative that this team was never supposed to make the playoffs after KD left. They were a championship contender. They took the Warriors to seven games. You know, like they were a really good team. And I don't think he made them better also. That is probably the biggest difference, right? Like Jokic doesn't even need to touch the ball that much to make his teammates better. And I think that's also really valuable in an NBA where I think, you know, just being able to relinquish the ball and let other players touch it is really valuable. I think that's what makes Steph so valuable too, because you just need to have a lot of talent now to win championships, and you need to find a way to make it all fit together. And like Jokic is like, you know, he's like a mold of clay that also just like shits gold everywhere, you know, like you can kind of just do whatever, you know? And it's going to be good, right?
If there was a movie of Jokic, I hope he's a mold of clay that shits gold is the poster quote. Speaking of making things fit together, this is something that's been plaguing Daryl Morey for the last couple of months, obviously. And he just came out.
And also you.
Yeah, and me. And he's been, Daryl came out this week and did one of his, it's been a while, but one of his periodic State of the Unions about the Sixers, but largely Ben Simmons and the state of the trade market. He talked to 97.5, a radio station in Philadelphia, and it was a typically expansive yet cryptic interview. Like Daryl will give these very long answers, and then at the end, you're just kind of like, so you don't know or you're not going to say. So I'll just give you two of the main quotes that I thought were of note, and I'll ask you.
Before you do, I love that that radio, like local radio, has just become Maury's like number one form of communication.
It's his preferred platform.
Yeah.
This is quoting Daryl. If you trade one of these great players for multiple players, and I think that he's referring to this idea of, you know, Ben Simmons for, you know, three pretty good players rather than a top 30 player. So if you trade one of these great players for multiple players, it does not move your championship odds enough to make a difference. It might take us from where we're at now to a little bit better, but it's very slightly better. And we want to, for Joel, we have to make sure we get this right and that we move ourselves into a higher tier of ability to win the championship and not just nudge ourselves from having the seventh best chance to maybe the sixth best chance in the league. So I thought that was a really like clear statement of intent, of principles, and of like the tenets of like what he's trying to follow when he goes through the process of looking for a Ben Simmons and possibly a Tobias Harris destination, since that has also come up.
Yeah. And then he says the opposite thing.
The second quote, which I think was, I just is notable, is I 100% believe he, meaning Ben Simmons, can play for us again, and he'd be literally almost the perfect player we could have to pair with Joel Embiid. It doesn't even take that difficult a look to say our defense goes from the best in the league to average. That's a massive part of the game, and Joel and Ben together always put together an elite defense. That is so important for playoff basketball. Our rebounding has gone from 10th to near the bottom of the league. The only difference between last year's team and this one is Ben Simmons.
Yo, let's keep pumping that lineup data, that Joel Simmons two-man, that starting lineup, offensive rating, defensive rating. Let's go, Daryl. Let's play the hits. I love it.
So, would you be shocked if Ben Simmons wears a Sixers uniform in a game this season?
No. No, I wouldn't. So I thought the quote that you were going to say is the other thing he said. And I think this was also to I read it. So
yeah,
this is all
in the 97.5.
Okay. I don't know if this is, but I think it is. But he said, I do think with how great Joel is, our line has moved down a little bit because Joel has lifted us into contention by his sheer will of greatness this year. Which, by the way, like, way to sneak in some MVP peddling for your guy. Really smart. Then he says, that does push the number of deals that we would do more likely, if that makes any sense. And I think that was important because we've talked about this before too, but like when you talk about the math of this, like he's always kind of said what he said, what you quoted him as saying, where he's not going to make a move that doesn't move the needle for championship contention. That's always been his thing. He wants superstars. He doesn't want stars. He wants superstars, right? Like that's the other side of it, is like how can you afford to waste Joel's prime? Like there's a mathematical equation of that too, where like a great player, you know, you don't know how many years that they're going to have of being completely at their peak. So it's interesting. I feel like it's strange that all of the GMs are kind of just saying what's on their mind. Like we talked about Travis Schlenk last right. week. And it makes things a little bit more confusing because this is completely logical. But at the same time, I just can't believe anything that is said publicly. So it makes it a little tough.
I do feel like NBA GMs are getting prolonged exposure to podcasting. And it's making them like more candid, even though they're not necessarily giving these statements on pods. I feel like they just like sit there and they're like listening to like Rogan or something. And they're like, I got to be honest. I got to make some stuff happen on the blogs, man. Let's do it.
I love that. Yeah, it's like David Griffin when he spends a couple years in the media and then he gets to the Pelicans and he just starts saying too many things. Like, yo, wrong mic, dude. So I think with Simmons playing right now is actually the perfect sweet spot for him to play.
I think that they would have to get past the trade deadline. I think that they would have to be like, see, we tried. Look, like he has not made a public statement. It's come through Rich. It's come through Shams, through Rich. That's about the extent of what we know about where Ben Simmons' head is at right now. Mm-hmm. In his interview, Morey was like, we've talked and we've even had some conversations directly with Ben. He's no closer to playing than he was when he made this decision. But like the fact that we're talking is a foundation for talking. So it was like there's some light at the end of the tunnel, but it's also pretty dark. Once the trade deadline passes, and if Daryl, let's say, is just bringing these deals and saying, like, look, I'm not going to trade you for Timberwolves bench players, you know what I mean, or whatever it is, and once he kind of keeps bringing these deals forward, if in fact he's doing that, maybe after the All-Star break, Ben Simmons has, like, a change of heart or is like, I need to redeem some value or, like, you know, I'm not going to take an entire year of my career off or I simply want to get paid or whatever, all of those things that come into play, and he comes back. Whether he comes back and he's like the same player he was last year for better or for worse, I don't know.
He just got engaged a little while ago. He's already got his ring. I think Simmons is probably a little less concerned with playing.
Did you just say he just got his ring?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's about to hoist the real Larry O'Brien.
Exactly.
That's love.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But I would like to like kind of like speak directly to both parties here because I think we're all a little bit sick of this, right?
Right.
This is a really good sweet spot for Ben Simmons to play some games. There's, I think, 9 or 10 games until the trade deadline. And right now, if he plays, like, I think that's a long enough time for him to get back into rhythm. February 8th, they play the Suns. That'd be, like, the last game before the trade deadline. I say what Simmons should do is he should suit up for, like, for those 9 games prior. and he should say, hey, look, I'm here. I'm upping my trade value. February 8th, that morning, start acting really weird. Start acting super weird. Just like put the pressure on, like, I don't know if I'm going to play today. And then just maybe ghost. And just see what kind of pressure that puts on Philly. But it also helps Philly too, because once he shows he can play, like, you know, the value they can get on some of these offers is actually pretty close. And you also only have to have him play for like 9 games. Like, you know, if you're thinking about your culture and winning a championship, like, you don't have to drag. Like, if he plays after the trade deadline, then maybe if he wants to, like, if it turns into a thing where he stays, then great, right? Like, if he comes back and they figure things out, nobody knows how it's going to happen. Assuming that doesn't happen, I think right now, just, like, suck it up and play, come back, everybody act like we're best friends. It's a good time. It's a good time, and it's 19 days until the deadline. Like, 2 weeks, that's not too long. And honestly, like, I think it could kind of be, like, one of those things where, like, they haven't actually seen each other for so long. Like, Joel and Ben could, like, that's long enough for them to actually kind of like playing together again, but like not too long that they're like, oh yeah, I remember why I didn't like this, you know?
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. There are so many excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, who the heck is Arby? I don't feel like a sandwich right now. Or how many times do I have to tell you? I'm vegan! Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Don't miss the premiere of your new wireless savings with Visible. It's time to switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's no hidden fees. No, really. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This one I'm trying to figure out exactly how I want to phrase it. So let me work on it on the fly. But it's essentially whether or not, like, if we're calling it away Kyrie, you know, capital A, like that, this version of him that only plays in away games. Would you be shocked if away Kyrie is not enough for the Nets to win the conference, even with Durant coming back?
If Durant's back, then I think you can get away with having Kyrie for 3 or 4 games in a series, depending on if they have home court advantage.
You think they can beat the Bucks that way?
If they have Kyrie for those games, yeah. I think they were, when healthy, in that series too, when the Nets were healthy, they were a better team than the Bucks. That said, I think the Bucks are better this year too. So, you know, I still think it'd be a very close series. But that gives them a little bit of an edge because those guys actually fit together too, right? Like, they don't necessarily need to do like the Lakers thing of like needing to get reps so they can figure out how these guys who don't space the floor can fit together. Like, the Nets are seamless, you know? They can kind of just play five out and go in transition and just kind of have fun together, honestly, when they are all playing together. So I think it could, but I don't know. Like, it would still be tough, right? Like, we've never seen anything like this happen. And I also, like, it kind of brings up this question I wanted to ask you too. Like, if you're the Nets, what do you prefer in a series? Do you want one extra game of Kyrie, or do you want one extra game at home? What's your answer?
I think it's Kyrie.
Yeah. Right?
I don't really get the impression that it's like Fortress Barclays and like we are unbeatable while we're in Brooklyn.
Right. Like, it kind of adds like a chill aspect to the rest of the regular season for them too. Like, they definitely do need to like figure out a lot of stuff because of their injuries. Like, they don't really, like, their role player rotation around the big three is kind of an issue. And then it's
erratic.
Yeah. Yeah. And now Paul Millsap is, you know, they've kind of mutually agreed to find a role that allows him to contribute more. So, you know, just another one of like the many kind of defender role player rollers that they have is going to be out. So I have questions, but I would not be shocked. I think it'd be pretty 50-50.
I also kind of wonder too, as NBA games start to matter more a little bit down the stretch here, and maybe if, you know, we get like a more vibrant live atmosphere in certain places, like whether or not it gets a little bit more antagonistic towards Kyrie in opposing gyms. I don't know if you saw, like, they were fucking with him in Cleveland and he got a little bit defensive. I mean, I actually thought what he said was pretty funny, where some guys were just like, oh, don't you need LeBron? Like, you need LeBron. And like, he just turned to the guy and was just like, I won you a championship and you're not fucking grateful, you know? Like, and he has a point, you know, but the thing is that I do wonder whether or not, like, it's just going to get like a little bit, as you get into the playoffs and as you get into like the close of the season, like opposing arenas being the only experience Kyrie has of basketball might be like a little bit antagonistic.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. That could be fun for Kyrie as well. I have to say, I prefer Kyle Kuzma's response to Cavs fans when they told him, like, you only won a title because of LeBron. He's on the, like, this was this year they were playing the Wizards. He's just turned around. He was like, pot kettle, guys. Like, he was basically just like, yeah, you too. But yeah, I mean, he's the single most polarizing player in the NBA. I don't think it's actually particularly close. Yeah, it could get that way. I think Kyrie seems to like that, though. I don't think it's something that he would particularly mind. Although I'm sure he would love to play against a home crowd and everything. I think everybody would. But I think, like, Kyrie might be the type of guy that could, you know, do you think it could kind of give him fuel? Do you think, like, that sustained sort of, like, never playing at home feeling?
If he was going to change his mind about, honestly, getting vaccinated, I think he would have done it when Durant got hurt and would have been like, this, we obviously need some help and I will change my mind. And I think he's not going to change his mind. So this is going to be the way it is until vax mandates are repealed. And I don't think that that's going to happen in a lot of the cities that he's in New York City, frankly. They haven't done it yet. So we can stay in the East. And I wanted to ask you a question that was one of the bummers of the week, which is that Lonzo is going to miss, I believe, 4 to 6 weeks with surgery on his slightly torn meniscus. I think for as much as DeRozan is clearly an all-star and is like on the outside looking in of MVP talk, Lonzo has been maybe the most essential bull. Like, I think he just makes that whole thing work in a really profound way, both in his defense and his playmaking. He is one of my favorite passers of the ball. I just find that even when it's not the flashy pass, it's the pass that hits the shooter like in stride, right in his breadbasket, right where he needs it. You know what I mean? Like the passing he has and the way he finds guys who are open, and even has that old school point guard of like, let me get this guy going, let me get this guy going, like making sure everybody eats. I don't think that they're going to fall apart by it in any means, but I was curious whether you thought Lonzo's injury dragged the Bulls down. And would you be shocked if they got dragged all the way down into the play-in?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about his impact.
The thing about the East is that the first place is not that far from seventh place right now.
Yeah. Right now, the Wizards at eighth are only 6 games back from the Bulls. But at the same time, like, that's still 6 games. And I think the Bulls are still a playoff team. Without Lonzo, right?
Sure. Oh, I think they're great. Yeah.
I think it would be a pretty steep fall. And they're also, their strength of schedule isn't too tough when he's out too. So I think it can kind of save him a little bit as well. But I think you're right, though. Like, you know, if we want to talk about Lonzo's impact on the team, it's just like, you know, they run in transition. They are incredibly well balanced. Their perimeter defense is really good. That's the reason that they've been able to stay afloat. But, you know, I think a lot of people thought that their defense would be a lot worse than it is. But you had, you know, Caruso, who's also, he's been out, and Lonzo is kind of like the head of the snake, preventing just like the regular kind of you know, just the penetration that you know, I think most defenses are kind of just that is how they play defense, is they assume penetration will happen, they go from there. And I think with the Bulls, they kind of rely on Lonzo and Caruso, and they get some steals, and they also just like have the rest of their guys play pretty conservative, and that like the defense at the top is what allows them to do that. So I think I'm curious to see what their defense looks like without him. Like, that does concern me, but it doesn't concern me enough to think that they're going to go from like first to eighth by any means. Like, this team still has like They're going to have to get some guys back, but like they just have so much scoring. And I think now we'll kind of, maybe we'll, now we'll see that sort of like floundering, like has to, they have to be hot every night type of team to score. But like you've got enough talent on that team that like they'll stay afloat, I think, for that period of time.
I would be shocked if this drags them into the play-in, because I think that they've weathered absences throughout the season. This is one of the teams that's had the most like up and down roster stuff with COVID, with injuries. They lost Pat Williams, obviously. They've without Caruso for a while. I think that they're used to the next man up stuff, you know, to the extent that you believe it. Is the next man up like on the level of Lonzo? No, but I think that they'll be able to patch it together until he comes back. It's just if he comes back and he's kind of in the same zone that he was for the first half of the season, because it's been such a thrill to watch him.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be pissed at more like, you know, Javonte Green as well, right? Like it's fine.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Let me burn through a couple more of these. Would you be shocked if the Lakers don't make the playoffs? Lakers are in eighth currently. They're 22-23. Mm-hmm. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Everybody knows what we're dealing with right now. And you know, like I thought that the Pacers beating the Warriors last night was actually like good for the Lakers. But it was still like that Lakers Pacers game, I thought was almost, I really did think that Vogel was going to get fired after that, you know, or that they were going to trade Russ for like one Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, changes seem to be, you know, coming. I would still be pretty surprised if they didn't make the playoffs. Yeah, Anthony Davis is coming back. Vogel also, you know, like in the midst of all these rumors, finally kind of did the thing of benching Russell Westbrook. Now, I'd be curious to see where things go from here. There's a lot of people sort of pushing him to kind of, you know, go the LeBron route, the Carmelo route, and make some change. Actually, KOC had a great video about that this morning for The Void. He kind of did a Lakers deep dive. So we don't have to get into all of, like, the logistics, but I think, you know, it's kind of either Westbrook's going to have to come off the bench. The big three, I feel like, kind of need to be staggered around shooters. Like, two of those guys and three shooters could work. And the closer Vogel gets to that, like, I think the better for, you know, his job security, obviously. But I don't know. So much of it is really just like I said earlier, Russ's volatility. Like, will he come off the bench? Or, like, will he take reduced minutes? Will he stop shooting threes? Like, will he kind of do, like, the thing he did around this time with Houston, actually, of, you know, just becoming a driver and stuff? Like, he has shown the willingness to adjust in that moment. Then he kind of reverted back. So he is just such a big question mark. And then I think the thing becomes, like, if Westbrook doesn't change, then he has one of the more untradeable contracts. And it's easier to get rid of a coach than it is to get rid of the player, right?
That's ultimately my other question about the Lakers is, would you be shocked if Frank Vogel was still coaching the Lakers at the end of the season? It's not out of the question for LeBron teams to change horses midstream. And the only thing I would say is that, A, Vogel won a championship with the Lakers, so there might be some sort of deference towards him, at least letting him finish out the season. And B, I don't know who comes in that's like does a better job than Frank Vogel. I don't know that there's like an obvious fix that a new coach with a different system, like, I don't even know. And also, to be completely frank, I don't know that you could pry Kenny Atkinson from like the Warriors bench to give one example of a coach that could be a candidate. Like, what if Kenny Atkinson's like, I want to finish out the season with Golden State and win an NBA title?
Yeah, he's already had the experience with the Nets. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, do you think he really wants to go into this cauldron of shit with the Lakers and be like, great, you know, like, I'm overseeing LeBron's twilight and this Russ meltdown when I could be playing, like, sitting next to Steve Kerr and helping, like, Draymond, Clay, Steph, Kuminga, you know, and Andrew Wiggins won a title.
Yeah, but the thing is, somebody will, right? Like, there's only
for
30
sure
of those jobs. Like, that's kind of the thing with it, right?
Yeah, it's not a bad one. It's the Lakers. Like, it doesn't open very
often. Yeah, it's the Lakers.
Often.
It's LeBron. Right. You still have a shot at a title, right? So I think, like, you know, they would have. But I do think, yes, there would be certain coaches that I think might be wary. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's not like the Lakers, like, through all of this have been, like, a dramatic disaster or anything off the court. Like, not as of late, right? Like, the problems have been coming on the court. But, you know, LeBron kind of came out, was pretty supportive of Vogel in that he just didn't, like, he felt as though, like, you know, he just didn't want to answer the questions about his job security in a way that was, you know, he seemed a little angry. He seemed a little defiant, right? He seemed a little like, I'm not, you know, you're not going to get me to do that, mm-hmm, essentially. And maybe that was just his read. But, you know, I think it's still a pretty attractive job. But like you said, man, like, there are some things that Vogel could definitely do better, right? Like, I think he's too in love with having, you know, size down low, size over spacing especially, but he's changed that. You know, we got LeBron at center. He's now benched Westbrook. Like, he's trying stuff. And, like Lakers have had so much turnover this year. Like, played a bunch of different lineups. So, I mean, I don't know. As long as he still has a locker room, which is not, like, not nothing, by the way. Like,
for
that's
sure.
The other thing you have to consider. If you get rid of Vogel, you got to figure out somebody who can come in and actually, you know, command that locker room in the midst of, like, what is not turmoil yet, but is kind of, like, near turmoil. And it's certainly basketball turmoil in a certain way. But I don't know that you can just, like, find, like, who would you, if the Lakers were to get rid of Vogel, like, honestly, first of all, I don't even think Kenny Atkinson would be a good choice for that job. Like, who do you think would be the person to hire?
I have no idea. There's the usual suspects. A lot of them are, like, kind of media adjacent, like Mark Jackson or Jeff Van Gundy or somebody like that. But I don't know who a quick fix is here. Like, I can't imagine who would be like, I'm the steady hand that can come in and fix this all
right
up. So, yeah, I think Vogel probably finishes out the season, and I think the Lakers do at least make it into a play-in game. I mean, once with Davis back, you would just have to assume that alone kind of, like, rights the ship. But it would also require a lot of, like, pretty bad Western Conference teams to get a lot better in the second half of the season to pull the Lakers out of it. Let's end with this last one on the Western Conference. Would you be shocked if this is the Jazz's year? So would you be shocked if this was Utah's year to kind of shake off the playoff motion sickness and actually find themselves either in a conference finals or even an NBA finals?
Yeah, the Jazz are in, like, this really weird moment right now. You know, they've been compared to the Bucks of last year by a lot of smart basketball people. I think Charks wrote something about that on The Ringer. You know, JJ Redick has been saying it on his pod. And I think it's a pretty good comparison in some ways, in that, like, you know, the narrative side of it, where, like, this is a team that flamed out last year, and now as a result we're going to completely ignore them. And the fact that they only made, like, kind of subtle changes, and they believe that, I mean, actually, like, that's not really fair to the season that the off season that the Bucks had to get those guys, but we weren't appropriately crediting for them for how different they were from the season before, even in that regular season. You know, I think we kind of just ignored it, and I think that's kind of happening with them to an extent, but they still have some of the same problems as last year. Like, I still think that they could really use, like, that wing defender, and maybe they can make some stuff happen at the deadline. I'm sure they'll certainly be, like, involved, right? Like, that'll be a big part of it. Like, do you get in on, like, the Jeremy Grant thing? Is there there's definitely a trade market for
sure.
Jeremy Grant. I don't know that there's, like, a seller,
yeah,
though, really, necessarily. So I'm really curious about them, and I actually just don't really know what to make of them right now, because right now also, like, you know, did you see kind of, like, the back and forth between Mitchell and Gobert?
I did, but for our listeners, explain it.
So Gobert did an interview where he talked about, I actually think what he said was reasonably innocuous.
Does Rudy Gobert have podcast brain too?
Yeah, everybody has podcast brain. Everyone's just saying, you know what? Like, I think we're all kind of in a moment of, we just say things, and I think there's a little less, like, you know, like, people aren't really trying to be perfect anymore outwardly in public, which is actually just probably a good thing. But anyway, so Gobert was doing this interview, and he was talking about how the Jazz aren't really, like, on the Warriors and Suns level in terms of their defensive consistency and their habits. I would argue he's right. You know, it's why this team inspires so many questions. But the thing that got kind of, like, blown up was that he complimented Booker's defensive intensity, which, I guess, like, to people felt like a shot at Donovan Mitchell, which seems like a stretch until Donovan's asked about it. And he's basically just, like, stone faced and like, hey, yeah, I guess, you know, we all want to make this team better. I guess this is his way of doing it. It wasn't like he was like, guys, come on. Like, he was kind of on the other
right.
side of it, just being like,
I did
oh,
take
okay.
it personally.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Which is kind of like, it's like, okay, all right, then that means that there's probably something there then. Which, I mean, we know that there's something there from years, but.
So at this point, would you be shocked if I told you the Jazz are going to the finals?
Would I be shocked? This is the only question that I put out there. So I didn't even actually think about whether, I think I asked it because I just don't know. You're shocked?
I'll tell
you. Shocked?
I would be. Yeah, I would be. I would be, and I wouldn't be surprised if they with all the changes that have been made in the front office with Danny Ainge coming in,
oh yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked if this also led to some sort of restructuring of that team, whether that's Quinn Snyder, cough, cough, Lakers, or whether that's breaking up the Donovan-Rudy duo, or whether there's other guys around the periphery of those guys that they try to move in and out. But
yeah.
I don't think that Danny Ainge came in to just like kind of watch the shop. He came in to probably like make them a little bit more volatile.
Yeah,
you know?
that's a good point.
Dealer Danny.
It's funny actually to see the Jazz in so many more trade rumors now that connection.
Exactly, because Danny Ainge is original podcast brain.
He truly is. Yes, yes.
We can wrap it up there. For Sirit, this is Chris. We were produced by Chris Sutton. Thanks for listening to The Answer. We'll be back next Friday. You can listen to tons of NBA stuff on The Ringer NBA Show, on Bill's show, on Russillo's show, on Mismatch Feed. Got you covered all week, and we will see you next Friday.